And lastly, I very seldom write poems from recounting personal experience directly. This is a fairly new poem, and it's an exception to that. I think the reason that I don't like to write poems from experiences is when you write a poem, you not only recreate the experience, you create something new about it, and therefore you destroy, or I feel as if I destroy something of what the real experience was. In this case, though, I've been finding myself feeling very claustrophobic, partly through teaching, partly through emotional circumstances and things like that. And I remembered very clearly, in an emotional way, a place that where I desired to be, a place that reflected, I suppose, a kind of psychic freedom at the time, which was the Little Bighorn, called by the Indians the Greasy Grass, the place where Custer was defeated, where my wife and I had stopped on the trip from Iowa City, a long trip that we took camping out on the way from Iowa City out to Portland. What I liked about the place, I think, what remained so strongly with me was that tremendous feeling of expansiveness. Relatively flat, somewhat rolling land, high grass, and you could just see as far as the horizon in every direction. The poem is called Rosebud. It's kind of a talky, prosaic poem. Basically recounts this experience of the drive and a couple of things within it, particularly that place. One other thing I should mention, there's a Sioux holy man mentioned within the poem. This is Black Elk. Really gorgeous, one of the most profound books that I have ever read. First because he's a visionary, and second because he was an extremely human and tragic figure, is the biography of a Sioux medicine man by the name of Black Elk. If anyone's interested in getting the book, it's called Black Elk Speaks, and it's published by the University of Nebraska Press. He was a man who had visions when he was a child and again when he was an adult of rituals to act out to save his people from the white men, to recreate the land that they were losing, to recreate the buffalo. You know, during the Ghost Shirt Dances, the messianic movement in the 1890s, the Indians were in such a state about losing their old life. Their culture has been totally destroyed. They're in a far worse position than any other minority group in this country, I think. Because nothing of their old culture is left, essentially. They were doing things like the government was providing them with cattle on the reservations, and they would, instead of simply butchering and eating the cattle, they would let the steers go one by one and hunt them, as they had the buffalo before. There's something beautiful but very tragic in that. They believed, as a part of the ritual of the ghost shirt dancing in the 1890s, which our government eventually put down, stopped them from doing, that the land that the white man had come to inhabit would move out from beneath them. The Indians would rise up in the air. They, their families, their possessions would rise up in the air. The land would move out beneath them. And they would come down again in a new continent which moved underneath them, which would be the America that was before the white man had destroyed so many of the resources within it. I think some sense of whatever emotion is in this poem is also about that. And in a funny way, I don't feel close to the land particularly, probably because I grew up in a city, but I do in a general way feel close to it. And the sense of us destroying it as we are right now is such that you can almost get a feeling that we're like among the last people who will have a sense of nature, who will have the opportunity to have a sense of nature. And that's what this poem is essentially about to me. Rosebud. The title refers to an Indian reservation, the Rosebud Reservation, where Black Elk lived. There is a place in Montana where the grass stands up 2 feet. Yellow grass, white grass, the wind on it like locust wings, and the same shine. Facing what I think was west, I could see a broad valley and river miles into the valley that looked black, and then trees. To the south was more prairie, darker than where we stood, because the clouds covered it, a long shadow like the edge of rain racing toward us. We had been driving all day and the day before through South Dakota along the Rosebud, where the Sioux are now farmers and go to school and look like everyone. In the reservation town, there was a Sioux museum and trading post. We drove back and forth through the town in the heat, looking for something, and stopped there. There were some implements inside, a long bow of shined wood that lay in its glass case, reflecting light. The walls were covered with framed photographs. I can still see them. The Ogallala Indians posed in fine dress in front of a few huts and some horses nearby. A feeling, even in those photographs, the size of a book, of spaciousness. I wanted to ask about a Sioux holy man whose life I had then recently read and whose vision had gone on hopelessly past its time. I believed then that only a great loss could make us feel small enough to begin again, and I still do, though it does no good. The woman behind the counter talked endlessly on. There was no difference I could see between us, so I never asked. The place in Montana was the Greasy Grass, where Custer and the 7th Cavalry fell, a last important victory for the tribes, though in the number of men killed it would seem to us small. We had been driving all day, hypnotized, and when we got out to enter the small, flat American tourist center, we began to argue. And later, walking between the tall grass and reading plaques, my wife made an ironic comment. I believe it hurt the land, not intentionally. It was only meant to hold us apart. Later, I read of Benteen and Ross and those who escaped, but what I felt then was final. Lying down, face against the warm side of a horse, and feeling the lulls endlessly, the silences just before death. The place might stand for death, every loss rejoined in a wide place. Or it is rest as it was then after the long drive, nothing for miles but grass, a long valley to the west, and living in history. Or it is just a way of living gone, like our own every moment. Because what I have to do daily and what is done to me are a number of small indignities, it was important to write this. I think many things we all say to each other are not intentional, that every indirect word will accumulate over the earth, and now, when we may be approaching something final, it seems important not to hurt the land.
Thank you.